From KPFK, Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. On the same day that the most damning testimony in the public impeachment hearings took place, with former Trump loyalist Gordon Sondland confirming a quid pro quo, 10 Democratic candidates gathered on a stage in Atlanta for the latest presidential candidate debate. House Democrats plan to lay out next steps soon in the impeachment inquiry, potentially charging the president with bribery and obstruction of justice, as presidential candidates continue to keep their eyes on the White House. My guest today is Jeff Cohen, media critic, writer, and retired journalism professor at Ithaca College. He is the founder of the media watchdog group Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, as well as the group RootsAction.org. Welcome to the program, Jeff.
Great to be with you.
So let's first talk about the impeachment saga. This week, we had three back-to-back days of impeachment testimonies, 9 people testifying. That followed from 2 days of live public impeachment hearings last week. That's a lot of witness testimony. Our radio station, home radio station, and other stations and television stations have been airing these live. It's getting a little wearying, but Republicans don't seem to be tired. They seem to be hammering on the same questions over and over again to try to deflect attention. As far as you can tell, is it obvious to the American public that the president of the United States engaged in gross misconduct?
I think the meter is moving slightly in the direction of impeachment. It is damning evidence that Trump did something you're not allowed to do, which is use foreign policy against an opponent of a major party. I think the critique of what the Democrats have done is, you know, the Democrats have so many grounds on which they could have moved for impeachment. And there's some of us, like at RootsAction.org, you know, we have a list of like 25 possible grounds for impeachment. And it's our view that Pelosi and the leadership should have moved toward impeachment, set up the stage even when they were in the minority, and then moved full tilt when they took power in January. And it would have included some really important grounds, like Trump is involved in self-enrichment in violation of the Constitution. Trump has twice invoked national emergencies explicitly, publicly, to get around Congress's power to appropriate funds. He's abused the pardon power by instructing people, I'll pardon you if you break the law. He's done one infraction. I mean, even the Muslim ban is a clear violation of the First Amendment. You cannot discriminate based on religion. So all of these things have happened since the Trump regime took power. Pelosi and the leadership would never say, you know, that's a grounds for impeachment. They would whine about it, moan about it, but all they ever said about impeachment was we're waiting for the Mueller report, which was silly. The Russian conspiracy was always a weak case, but there were these provable things he did in public. So, I mean, my complaint is impeachment should have begun in earnest months and months ago, and then Ukraine would have been exposed and it would have been icing on the impeachment cake. We know from exit polls back in November 2018, almost no one voted on the basis of Russia collusion. But had the Democrats talked about, is this president a profiteer using his office to raise money in violation of 2 anti-corruption clauses in the U.S. Constitution? The voters understand corruption and self-dealing. The Russia collusion thing, I think, really delayed matters.
Now that this impeachment issue is playing out on the national stage, regardless of our critiques of what the Democrats should have done, one of the things that seems to be popping up pretty clearly is that this idea of let's defeat Trump at the polls rather than through impeachment is undermined, because Trump was literally trying to stack the deck in his favor in next year's election through this offense, which is an impeachable offense.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I'm just saying this should have happened months ago. Mm-hmm. and that would have eliminated this complaint from the Republicans, which does strike some reasonableness with independent, low, quote, low information voters, that, well, the election's less than a year away already. So my concern is it's been stalled. You know, we were waiting for the Mueller report, then we're waiting for the unredacted Mueller report, then Pelosi said she's waiting for Mueller to testify, which was a predictable dud. But yes, you are right. The correct argument is Trump has shown a willingness to involve foreign government in trying to interfere in the next upcoming election, and that's why you cannot wait. You cannot allow Trump to do that when we've got an election. You've got to move full speed ahead. I understand that argument, and I support it.
The Republicans in this impeachment have been trotting out a series of baseless conspiracy theories that are, banging around the right-wing echo chamber, the blogosphere, the conspiracy websites, and of course Fox News as well. And they have a list of talking points that they're sticking to. After a while, though, do they emerge as being entirely unhinged, or are they actually succeeding in this idea that repetition in, equates to reality?
You know, I'm trying to find, look at the polls, and it's hard to tell. I'm assuming the impeachment meter has moved a little better in the Democrats' direction. But you do mention they keep bringing up all this conspiracy stuff. And the worst one is this idea that there's a Democratic National Committee server being hidden somewhere in the Ukraine by CrowdStrike. And what's fascinating about that, and Trump believes that CrowdStrike is run by a Ukrainian, and it's a cybersecurity company based in the US. One of the founders of it is Russian. He's not Ukrainian. I mean, I'm sorry, he was a Russian immigrant when he was very, very young. He's an American citizen. And that's part of the conspiracy theory. But the strangest thing, and you'll never hear it on Fox News, is that the National Republican Congressional Campaign Committee has been paying CrowdStrike from 2017 through the 2018 election up through this year. CrowdStrike is being paid by the Republicans to do their cybersecurity. So it's
Wow.
a ridiculous conspiracy theory. And I haven't heard the Democrats debunk it well, and it's so easy to debunk.
Right. On Thursday, we did hear from Fiona Hill, former White House advisor, who, in her opening statement, very clearly laid waste to these conspiracy theories, calling them unfounded. She so far seemed to have been the most credible witness to say what you're right, the Democrats should have been saying.
Well, I'm just concerned that in the phone call that Trump and Zelensky had, the president of Ukraine, where Trump is saying there's this CrowdStrike and the server and that wealthy individual, it's completely unhinged. And I haven't heard the Democrats say, well, if CrowdStrike is such a nefarious U.S. cybersecurity company, why are the Republicans and the National Republican Congressional Campaign Committee giving them thousands of dollars every month to do cybersecurity for the Republican side? It's easily debunked. Again, I wish Pelosi had not stalled and stalled. The thing that's weakening the Democratic Party case is that they have waited so long. And to have marginalized all these incredible affronts to the US Constitution that Trump has committed. You know, Ukraine should be icing on the cake, not the cake, but that's unfortunately the hand they are now playing.
Right, and you could argue that they would not have even gotten to this stage had the original whistleblower not filed their complaint, triggering what we're now seeing. How does Trump come across in all of this? He sounds enraged. On Thursday, he referred to Democrats as human scum. Last week, during former U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine Marie Yovanovitch's testimony, he literally tweeted nasty things about her while she was testifying. He seems, and on Wednesday, he was photographed holding very clumsily handwritten notes that were supposed to be his talking points, in his trademark black Sharpie. He seems to come across as more and more juvenile and panicked.
It's so sickening the way the Republicans are defending this emperor who keeps peeling his own clothes off. He's unhinged, he's illogical, he's narcissistic. He picked out, as you say, with his Sharpie and his notepad, he cherry picks something that Sondland had said when the Sondland testimony was a total indictment of President Trump. So again, he's unhinged, he's illogical, he's lazy, he's narcissistic, and the Republican Party is less a party than a cult.
Wow. Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up because it seems that the Republicans are really attaching their in the future of their entire party to this one man, presumably because he's delivering to them on the side some of the things that they're desperately in need of, such as remaking the judiciary, any potential future Supreme Court nominees, more tax cuts on the wealthy, etc. So let's talk about Joe Biden briefly as we transition to coverage of Wednesday night's debate. In this Ukraine story, Biden would like us to note that Trump is most fearful of having him as an election rival. However, is it hurting his candidacy, to have the issue raised that, yes, there was nepotism involved, or at least just unethical behavior when his son Hunter sat on the board of a large oil and gas company in Ukraine while Joe Biden was vice president?
It should hurt his campaign. That, there is corruption. The way I say it is the Republican Party is 99% captured by the corporate elite, and half of the Democratic Party is captured. And Obama appoints Vice President Biden to be the point person on Ukraine while Biden's son is receiving all this money from the natural gas company of Ukraine. It's pure corruption and nepotism, even if there was no crime violation. But I would argue that back in July, one could make the argument that Trump worried about Biden. But Biden has been such a weak candidate. He's having so much trouble raising money. Last quarter, he spent more money than he raised. And you have the excitement of the Democratic Party, and this is something that CNN and MSNBC, the allegedly anti-Trump channels, don't want to emphasize. You have two progressive presidential candidates, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, that in the last quarter, just from small dollar, not ever going to a high dollar event with rich folks or corporate folks, they raised about $25 million each in one quarter. And Biden raised $15 million in that quarter, mostly in high dollar amounts, and he spent more than he raised. So he's weak, he doesn't know the issues, he's got that corporate corruption hanging over him, as Hillary Clinton did. Hillary Clinton was a weak candidate in 2016, but she knew the issues. She was a good debater, she was articulate. Biden has this corporate corruption hanging over him. He's a weak debater. He doesn't know the issues. He's not articulate. So, the Democratic leadership, the corporate donor class, is still in some ways pushing Biden. I think most people realize Biden is fading and he's going to keep fading. That's why the corporate donor class, the corporate wing of the Democratic Party, is trying to push Pete Buttigieg, who's now getting an influx of corporate money that had been going to
Right.
Biden.
So let's actually play some highlights from Wednesday night's Democratic Party's candidate debate for president. This is, I've lost track, fourth or fifth debate this year alone.
Yeah.
And it was held on a stage in Atlanta, co-hosted by an MSNBC. Here are some of the highlights as gathered by the New York Times of the several hour, 2 hour long debate that featured the top 10 candidates. These are not all the candidates, however, that are running for president.
First of all, we have a criminal living in the White House.
The president felt free to break the law again and again and again, and that's what's happened with Ukraine.
By the way, I learned something about these impeachment trials. I learned, number one, that Donald Trump doesn't want me to be the nominee.
We cannot simply be consumed by Donald Trump, because if we are, you know what? We're going to lose the election.
Black voters are pissed off, and they're worried. They're pissed off because the only time our issues seem to be really paid attention to by politicians is when people are looking for their vote.
At some point, folks get tired of just saying, oh, you know, thank me for showing up, and say, well, show up for me.
I care about this because while I do not have the experience of ever having been discriminated against because of the color of my skin, I do have the experience of sometimes feeling like a stranger in my own country, turning on the news and seeing my own rights come up for debate.
I come out of the black community in terms of my support. If you notice, I have more people supporting me in the black community that have announced for me because they know me. They know who I am. Three former chairs of the Black Caucus, the only African-American woman that ever been elected to the United States Senate, a whole range of people.
No,
my point
no, that's
is,
not true.
True.
The other
that's
one is
true.
Here.
Come first. After so my point is,
I have a lot of respect for the vice president. This week, I hear him literally say that I don't think we should legalize marijuana. I thought you might have been high when you said it.
It's unfortunate that we have someone on the stage who spent 4 years full-time on Fox News criticizing President Obama.
What Senator Harris is doing is unfortunately continuing to traffic in lies and smears and innuendos.
I think that Pete is qualified to be up on this stage, and I am honored to be standing next to him. But what I said was true. Women are held to a higher standard. Otherwise, we could play a game called Name Your Favorite Woman President.
But I want to get back to Pete Buttigieg and his comment about experience.
I think experience should matter.
If your question is about experience, let's also talk about judgment.
And those are some highlights as captured by the New York Times from Wednesday night's two-hour Democratic debate for president. Among those top 10 candidates that made the cut were not two new late-coming candidates that we'll discuss later, Michael Bloomberg and Deval Patrick. But Jeff, one of the issues that came up on Wednesday night was the issue of race. And this is really critical. Cory Booker and Kamala Harris were the only two black candidates on stage on Wednesday night. Joe Biden tussled with both of them. Biden claimed that he is the candidate of the black community. And Cory Booker took issue with that. Pete Buttigieg has also had some interesting issues and friction with the black community. What do you make of some of the exchanges around black voter support, which is generally considered as critical for any presidential candidate?
Yeah, well, Biden has lined up a lot of the black elite, the black political class, a lot of endorsements. But again, he's a gaffe machine. And a gaffe, in the case of Biden, is he says what he really believes. You know, a gaffe is when a politician blurts out the truth. And he really believes people owe it to him. He's been around for so many decades. And what he says, I come from the black community. I thought the most important dialogue was between Cory Booker and Biden. I mean, the Democratic Party has the base of the Democratic Party wants the drug war ended. It's racist. It puts poor black and Latinos behind bars for crimes that white upper middle class people don't get put behind bars, and especially when it comes to marijuana use or sales. It's been going on for decades. So Booker correctly made it a racial issue. How come, you know, Mr. Biden, you're not standing up for decriminalization strongly and talking about the racism of the drug war? And Biden was out to lunch on that issue as
well. Right. I mean, just days before the debate, he called marijuana a gateway drug, sounding like, you know, like it stepped out of a time machine from the 1980s.
He's a throwback in so many ways. But again, if you can summarize Wednesday night's debate and the struggle going on within the Democratic Party, I mean, there's the old way of campaigning. That's the Biden way. and even the young candidate, Buttigieg, is campaigning that way. You go to corporations, you talk about go slow, status quo, incrementalism, because you know if you talk that way and give health insurance company talking points, you will get corporate donor money. And that's the old way. That was sort of pioneered by Bill Clinton, who is one of the most corporately corrupt Democrats in modern history. So there's that old way of campaigning. That's the only way Biden understands. My colleague Norman Solomon actually went and covered a Biden rally in Southern California, and there was almost no one there. So that old way of campaigning is you appeal to the corporate donors, you say things, you know, the yes, no, go slow, status quo, incrementalism. Amy Klobuchar is in that camp. Kamala Harris is in that camp. Pete Buttigieg is in that camp. But Biden is the main exemplar of that old way. The new way is you put forward a dynamic, progressive agenda with policies that will actually address the huge problems our country and planet face on climate change, on economic injustice, on mass incarceration, on the need for housing. And Sanders has led along with Warren, and they don't need the corporate donor money. This is what scares the mainstream media. This is what sickens me about these debates. Why are these debates always run by corporate networks that talk about Bernie Sanders and Warren? And they did Wednesday night after the debate on MSNBC. I heard Chris Matthews refer to Warren and Bernie as the hard left. So the DNC has all their debates with these corporate networks that hate the progressive base of the Democratic Party. Sanders and Warren have shown they don't need this corporate donor money. They're running on a progressive agenda. They're raising more money than everyone else. Their rallies are bigger than everyone else. Bernie had the biggest rally ever. And it scares the hell out of the New York Times, Washington Post, MSNBC, CNN, and, you know, on these keyboards of these mainstream reporters, besides having each letter, they have one key that says where they can just hit it and it squirts out two letters too far left to win a general election, which is what they try.
Right.
They try to drum that into our heads. This is what the corporate establishment of the Democratic Party is worried about. It's not that Bernie and Warren are too far left to win. It's that if they get the nomination, they will indeed win, and they will take power away from the corporations and the donors that have propped up the corporate wing of the Democratic Party. They're actually worried that Bernie and Warren might win. And remember, Hillary Clinton lost because she was too centrist, too wishy-washy, too vacillating, not because she was too far left to win.
Well, a central figure in the Democratic Party establishment is former President Barack Obama, who came under fire earlier this week for essentially saying, you know, criticizing people on the left for wanting to tear down the system, as if the billionaire class hasn't already torn down the system and tilted everything so far in their favor. And of course, his statements prompted an outcry on social media, with people saying, all right, if wanting Medicare for all is too far left, then I'm too far left. Others even went as far as saying, you know, you would have considered the abolitionist Harriet Tubman too far left, or, you know, or suffragettes to be too far left. And I thought that was a really important pushback against this centrism that, of course, will be the death of the Democratic Party and will lead to another loss in the White House next year. So I'm wondering, let's talk about the candidacies of Michael Bloomberg, former New York mayor, and Deval Patrick, former Massachusetts governor. And whether you think those late coming candidacies are yet another symptom of the real fear in corporate America of Warren and Sanders.
There's no doubt that the corporate donor class is freaked out. I get called by mainstream reporters who ask me about this, what's going on? And I say it's a meltdown, it's a freakout. And that's why Deval Patrick is in the race. He's very uncharismatic. He's a corporate centrist, a governor from the next state over.
On Bain Capital, a company that Trump criticized Mitt Romney for being part of.
Of course. And then
I'm not Trump, Obama, I'm sorry.
Yes. And then Bloomberg is the billionaire mayor of New York, whose most controversial policy was hated by the left and hated by Democratic activists, which was stop and frisk, a racist policing policy. But again, the Democratic donor class, they see Biden fading. He can't sustain. And then they see Mayor Pete ascending. Well, the mayor of South Bend, it doesn't seem likely that he's going to be their standard bearer, their stalking horse. So they're freaked out. And what they don't understand is that the more corporate Democrats that get in the race, clogging up that wing, it helps Bernie and Warren appeal to the majority of the Democratic Party voters and base. So, again, the strategy makes sense. When I was interviewed by Politico about this, I said something like, you know, the Democratic Party still has a corporate donor class, but what they don't have is a corporate boss, because a corporate boss would say to seven of these corporate Democrats, rather than two new ones entering, you guys get out of the race. This is the corporate Democrat we're supporting, so that Bernie or Warren doesn't get the nomination. They don't have the boss in the back room determining things. And that's why Bernie and Warren, speaking to the majority, not only of the Democratic Party, but a majority of the public on all of these issues, from Medicare to all, Medicare for all, raising the minimum wage, taxing the rich, addressing climate change in a serious way that provide jobs. All I do every day is look at the public opinion polls. Those are popular even with Republicans, and certainly with a lot of independents. So again, we don't have a party boss anymore, thank God. And all they have is the corporate Democrats fighting over a dwindling number of Democratic voters, and it's helping Bernie and Warren.
Jeff, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Always appreciate your insight and analysis into these issues.
Thank you.
My guest has been Jeff Cohen. He's a media critic, a writer, and retired journalism professor at Ithaca College. He founded the media watchdog group FAIR, as well as the group RootsAction.org. We've been discussing the impeachment hearings and Wednesday night's Democratic debate. I'm Sonali Kohatka. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.